So Tino Cannavale has clomped in and he just leaves a trail of detritus behind him. Every time he comes in here, there's a little pile of gravel and dirt and clods under the, and he's just come in and his chair got stuck in one. He's going, who's put gravel here? And I'm going, I wonder. Who else drags gravel into my nice clean studio, Tino?
It's just the gift I like to give you every week, Joel.
I don't need landscaping supplies. Tino just shakes his boots in my direction.
If you'd leave it there, things would grow.
I know. I remember the weekend that I had you and Greg Irons in. There must have been 9 different types of animal manure underneath that desk by the time the two of you had finished shaking your boots off.
Ah, the aroma. I'm bringing out an eau de toilette range. Yeah,
yeah. It's just toilet odour in your case. Tino Cannavale, what should we be doing in the gardening on this lovely sunny weekend?
It is lovely. With the rain and now with the warmer sort of ambient temperature, growth is going to be really accelerated. Look, if you've got stone fruit trees and they haven't bud burst yet, now's a really good time. If you have sprayed your for curly leaf, then another application now before leaf burst, and that should put you in really good stead. And look, going through, you can still prune a lot of those trees. You can still prune a lot of those deciduous ornamentals and fruiting plants that if they haven't burst yet. If they've started to burst yet, you can still get away with a bit of a tip here and there, but really you're cutting off new growth. So that's that spring growth that the plant's really pushing along. Other things you can go at, veggie patch, you can fill it with anything. Actually, the biggest part of that, the biggest problem at this time of the year is finding all the space to put in crops. You know, I get really excited and I'll put in a whole bunch of brassicas and lettuce at this time of the year because you get good growth out of them. But then I have no space left over for tomatoes, corn, zucchini. So good planning at this stage is really, really important. I tend to hold off quite a bit. If I don't have things in already, I'll wait for another week or two to plant. I'm sowing a lot of seed at the moment. Things like tomatoes are sort of still going in. Capsicums, chilies, pumpkins, a lot of zucchinis can go in 4-inch tubs now. Flowering plants are all the go. There's so many things out in flower as well. You know, the landscape where I just drove through is just yellow, but seeing a lot of the rhododendrons, the camellias, they're just gorgeous. It's a gorgeous time of the year. And now that we've had a bit of stillness, although the wind up here got a little bit rough,
And kind of in weirdly specific places. Like Margate Train had the roof trashed, but only kind of in the middle.
Yeah, look.
Either end was fine. You know, strange.
You get those wind tunnelling effects down those gullies, and if you're right in the path of that, then it's really hard on you and your garden. So that's where protection from that wind, and we're not out of the woods yet. You know, these equinoctial winds can last for quite a while. So just beware of those really delicate plants or new plantings putting in, just protecting them. But, you know, just get out there this time of the year. You know, you can start to feed with fertilizers. Citrus can start to be fed now if you're in a frost-free area. Putting down like liquid feeds of fish emulsion is really good. You get a really good quick feed, and then with the heat and with the water, you're getting a good burst of growth. So, look, I sometimes bag this time of the year out because of the wind, but to be honest, just looking around, seeing everything slowly wake up is, you know, it's what keeps you alive.
Let's get to gardening talk back. Anne in Penguin, you're still looking for more on for your lemon tree.
Yes, please.
Morning, Anne. How are we going?
Your lemon tree was hacked up by something, wasn't it, Anne?
Oh, look, the damage is just so extensive, right up the trunk of the tree to above my head.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm a bit out of breath.
No, you're right, mate.
What do I treat? There are slaters. I've rubbed a bit of the loose bark off.
Yep.
How do I treat it?
Well, I mean, from the photo, from my recollection, it looked like there was scratching all around it, and I think it was possum damage.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, look, there's a few options. I mean, really, a barrier protection is the only way of keeping them out 100%. But there are a few other options if you don't want to go to that kind of effort with infrastructure. You can use scent deterrents. You know, they can work, and they do work. They work on the disrupting the scent of the possum. And Yeah, you can do that with strong smelling tea. But the problem with a lot of things like that is it'll wash off with irrigation or with rain. So it needs to be reapplied. Things like hanging blood and bone in socks from the from the thing. Look, but as I said, these are only deterrents. So if you get a possum that really wants that lemon, only a bit of wire or some meshing is going to keep them out.
Yeah, I'll work on that. Yep. But do I need to treat the area that's damaged? Do I need antifungal stuff or anything?
Not necessarily. Like the tree, from that, there was a lot of bark damage and it sort of had got down to that softer wood because citrus do have that soft bark and wood. So, but the tree seemed to have healed itself up okay. What I'd be doing is, keeping an eye on it, doing what you did, sort of going around and getting any loose bits and trying to get them off, but bear in mind that those loose bits might even be protecting it before you sort out sort of the possum getting in there. Those loose bits of bark may be also protecting the tree from further damage from the possum.
Okay, so just work on keeping the possum away.
Yeah, and then just make sure you keep your tree well watered and well fed this season, and you should be okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And best of luck, mate.
I was worried about fungal problems.
I wouldn't worry too much about it. I'd treat it if it occurred, like to try and minimise it. But, I mean, at the moment, as long as you keep those wounds clean and free of debris and you know, flick any woodlouse or slater cheesy bugs off them, then you should be okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Best of luck, Wayne.
Good on you, and thank you very much as well. You're on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania with Joel and Tino doing Gardening Talkback today. Now, I'm going to get you to turn on your screen momentarily, Tino, and have a little look. I'll allow you to look at your screen.
I get distracted if we leave it on. So,
Kelly and Taruna says, hey, Tino and Joel, here's my lemon tree. This has been in a wine barrel for more than 5 years, and of those 5 years, local possums have nibbled any new growth. I didn't know possums would take such a fancy to lemon leaves. Anyway, my question is, should I abandon this tree, or if I did build a fortress, could it still survive and produce lemons again, or am I just producing possum fodder? There are still some green stalks. That is a very, very sad looking lemon tree.
Yeah, it is.
There is not
a
single leaf on that.
Hey, look, I'm ever the optimist though, so I would persist. I would build a structure around it. I'd keep it well watered. I'd put more soil in your pot and maybe give it a mulch. I usually mulch with a compost, you know, a good couple of centimetres of homemade or bought compost. Or manure even, you know, and then chuck a bit of straw over the top of that. If it's a windy position, probably try bark chips or something. A bit of coil of wire around the whole lot. You can sort of create almost a big cylindrical tube out of wire, and that can go around the whole thing, and that'll act as a good protection for a wine barrel like that. All those dead bits of stick that you can see and any damaged bits that they've, snapped off, I'd probably be trimming those up, removing any of the dead and just shortening any of the other growth. It'll just consolidate the plant's energy and hopefully you'll get a good bit of reshoot. And I'd be picking off any flowers for the next 12 months at least, just to allow that plant to grow leaves and, recover.
So build your possum fortress is Tino's advice on that one. Try and keep them out of here. Now, Jill, someone else has sent me she shared an album with me from Google Photos, and I'm going to put a moratorium on that because it's just a pain. I have to go and copy and paste and open new... Send me a text, Jill. Send me a text with the photo on it. That is the way to do it. 0438 922 936. Or even better, do what Judith has done and call us. Hello, Judith.
Oh, good morning, Zoll.
Good morning,
Tino.
Hello, how are you going?
Well, I'm going all right, but my camellia's nearly gone.
Oh.
I rang you before and I did everything and we cut things down and got sunshine onto it and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's six leaves only at the bottom bit. And the camellia tree itself is about 8 feet high. The rest of it is just, I think it's dead.
Yeah.
I'll have to get somebody to try and take it out of the pot and put it somewhere else.
Yes.
But what do we do? I mean, what could I tell them to do? I've got organic chicken manure and I've got blood and bone. Now, if we dig a hole, then what do we do?
You're wanting to put the camellia in the ground?
Yes.
Yeah. Dig a nice big hole, about half the size of the pot's width and about half the size of its depth, and get your soil out, your natural soil. You can mix your organic material through that soil, like a cake mix, and then put that back in the hole. And if you're in a heavy soil, whereabouts were you, sorry?
I'm in Battery Point. And in the front, I have a magnificent red camellia, which is doing so well, and it's flowering beautifully. This one's a white one.
I'd be making sure that it's a square hole, just in case that part of your garden's a little bit heavy. There are some heavier soils around, you know, the Hobart area, so that way the roots will break out nicely. Mix all your stuff through, put your camellia in, and make sure you give it a good amount of water this year. With the dead bit, or what looks to be the dead bit, grab your thumbnail or even a sharp knife and just go from start from the top and work your way down the tree. Just cut into the bark and see if it is green underneath it. If it's green, you can cut to certain points, to node points, and you can, try and persuade the tree to reshoot from areas. Yeah. If you've still got leaves down the bottom, then you've still got life in that tree. So I'd again, like with the last citrus caller, I would persist. I always... a lot of my favourite plants, I suppose, have been ones that I've rescued from nursery benches or from death, pretty much near death's right. door. So
what Tino's saying is he's going to kidnap my entire garden sometime soon.
The only problem I should state with camellias, as you probably do know, is they can be quite slow, you know. So to save one from seven leaves, if you do have to cut it all the way back down to that growth point, I'd probably start, you know, in saying that I persist, you know, you might want to just start again, you know.
Right. So what I'm doing actually is cutting down from the top all the dead bit till I get to a bit that looks like it's going to be alive, and then...
Yeah, good solid
bit. And then repot it. I've never heard of making a square hole.
Well, yeah, just with round holes tend to, in heavy clay, if you think of it like if you've ever had an old pot from an old nursery stand, the second stand or whatever, you pull the plant out and it's usually root bound. That's because it sort of wraps its way around the pot and it just sort of becomes a circular root mass. The same can happen in really heavy clay. You dig a hole, and as you're digging the hole, the walls of the hole, a circular hole, and it happens with a square hole as well, but the walls start to get a bit compressed with the shovel. So when the plant sort of grows through the initial cultivated soil that you've dug, you know, that the hole is, once it hits that clay, it acts like a pot, you know. It can't break through the heavy clay, so the roots start to wrap around and find the path of least resistance, I suppose, where they can get that water. With a square hole, though, they'll tend to hit the edges of the hole, and then they'll go down. So it just seems to work a little bit better. And I always dig my holes in heavy clay, because I've worked mainly in heavy clay, as a bell shape. So the opening or the aperture of the hole is smaller than the base of the hole. It's a little trick of turning your shovel around and sort of scooping out the bottom corners, because that also allows that drainage to happen that can, you know, that you dig a hole in some really heavy clays, just fills up with water and you end up with, you know, boggy feet. So that way it just allows that cultivation to happen a little bit, I suppose, further out, and the root zone. It allows it so the root zone hopefully isn't sitting in as much water.
Thank you so much for your call this morning, Judith. If you would like to talk to Tino,
the number
to call is 1-300-222-936. Good morning to you, Kay in Hobart. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Good morning. Good
morning, Kay.
Good morning. I was just thinking, wondering what is a good slow-release fertiliser that I could use sort of through most plants in the garden at this time of the year.
Yep, there's quite a few slow release fertilizers in sort of a beady prill kind of form that are
available. More natural, is that
yeah, look, of, yeah. There are, I mean, blood and bone in some ways, and a lot of those sort of, even manure, can be a semi-slow release, I suppose. They're not as quick as a liquid, but they do take time, you know, to work that nutrient down and sort of break down. And the beauty of using organic material or in the form of manure or organic fertilizer is you're actually feeding the soil. So that's where, I suppose, one of the big, you know, not differences, but one of the things with organic gardening or whatever you want to call it is working on the soil, you know, and feeding that, and that'll feed your plants. So rather than having the approach of I'll put this fertilizer down and my plants will go green, which, you know, inadvertently it does, but working on the soil as a long-term approach is always better. So
you think the blood and bone would be as good as anything?
Yeah, it's as good. It's a good sort of, you can chuck it around on most things. You know, natives don't mind it. Ornamentals love it. Veggies love it. But there are organic slow release, and there's also, you know, synthetic, I suppose, slow release. They both do the same job, and the plant sort of in essence, I suppose, doesn't know the difference between the two. But long term, I've found the soil is just far better if you using organic materials or organic fertilizers. Yeah,
that's all right. And I was read your article about the magnolias in the paper last weekend.
yeah.
And I've got a port wine magnolia sitting very reasonably close to the house. And do I dig it up or what do I do?
No. Is that the port wine, the Michaelia?
Michaelia
Figo. They're pretty good. They're all right. They usually, I mean, depending on the variety, they'll get to about 3 metres. And I mean, they're part of the Magnoliaceae family, but they're not magnolias as such. So, no, you should be finer with the Michaelia.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. And just sort of pruning and keeping it more compact, does that sort of affect the root growth as well? Or not necessarily.
If you go for a hard cut, that can sort of, the plant can respond by dying back in the root zone a little bit. You know, you can control roots that way. But if you're just pinching tips out, then no, you're really just keeping to the shape of the plant. And, you know, it's a really good way of actually keeping, you know, major cuts to a minimum, which is good for your hands, but also your plant as well. So, but every so often with those Michaelias, I'll go through every third or fourth year and sort of give them a good trim to shape, like try and keep central part of the plant out, because they do tend to want to just be a densish shrub, I suppose, as is their want.
That's okay, and that'll do all right. That won't mind the blood and bone,
right? No, they don't mind it either way. They're pretty tough, actually. They're a great garden plant, the Michaelia. Yeah.
Okay, all right, and thank you very much for that information.
My absolute pleasure.
Thank you kindly, Kay. Good to hear from you today. Now, Robin at Tyana has sent us some advice about making a fortress against possums. She said fortresses aren't hard to make. 3 to 4 star pickets, wire around the outside, polypipe crossed over hoop-like between the pickets, and cover with orchard netting. The possums sit back and cry. She sent me a picture of hers, which looks fantastic.
Am I allowed to turn my screen on again?
You're allowed to turn your screen on and have a brief look at that.
Be proud of me, I turned it off.
See that. It's a very good-looking little possum fortress that she's made. And look, I've shared that on my Twitter. Is the easiest way.
What's a Twitter?
So if you look up twitter.com/Joel Reinberger, you'll find that. And so when there's pictures to share, that's where I put them these days. And anyone with an internet connection can find that and find those pictures.
No, that's a great suggestion, a great little, easy, cheap method out of stuff you'll probably find in your back garden shed.
And look, we'll do one more picture just because Jill has been a very good listener and I said, please don't share with things with me via Google Photos. It doesn't really work. And she said, how's this? Is this a noxious weed or a beautiful native? It's about 2 feet tall and it's got a little yellow flower in the middle there.
Yeah, that's a noxious weed. It's called bone seed. It's pretty easy. It's South African, I think. It loves colonizing sort of areas that are dry and, you know, abandoned areas. So, yeah, I have a special thing with bone seed. Every time I see it, I rip it out. It's really easy to sort of either grub or pull out. And if you can get it now, and actually that goes out for everyone out there, if you know what bone seed is, pull out a bone seed. You know, do everyone a favor. they're easy to pull out or grub out, and easy to control that way. So I'd pull them out.
Sorry about that, Jill. Noxious weed, it's got to go. Daryl in Sorrel, how are you?
Morning, Daryl.
Morning, Turno. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Yourself?
Morning, Joel. Not bad. Listen, my question of potatoes, why do they grow a metre tall in the what's names?
Yeah, you're getting a lot of big extension growth out the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, you can heal that up. I found a lot of them do, and I've got a few that are about, probably not a metre, but they're certainly getting up to about 60 centimetres now. I've just healed them up and pushed around their stem. It's just a burst of growth that they've put on. And certainly earthing them up will make that stem so it's a little bit more solid, because the worst thing that's happened in the past is the wind comes along and just snaps that top off, and then your plant, well, it's been cut, so your crop suffers as a result. One thing that an old gardener I used to work with used to do with that situation is he would bend over that stem. He would gently bend it, and then he would cover the stem up. I mean, it goes on the same sort of principle as, you know, espaliering trees, where you're laying the main stem down, or you're bending the growth down so the sap flow is horizontal. So you're actually, you know, that way supposedly you get more fruit on a fruiting tree, and in this case you get more potatoes. Now, if anyone's got any takes on that, please ring in, let us know. But yeah, that was an old technique they used to do. It's like layering. They used to just cover it up, and then the tip would be exposed, and that'd continue to grow, you know, upwards, but that whole stem would be covered horizontally. So I'm not
doing anything wrong, not over fertilizing or over watering or whatever.
Yeah, look, it can be a nitrogen thing that you've added a lot of nitrogen, but potatoes, you know, they soak a lot of that nutrient up. They're pretty gross feeders, so you know, hopefully it converts into a bit of tuber development later on, but you know, fingers crossed and all. But yeah, I'd be certainly just earthing it up at the moment just to protect the plant. You'll be right. I reckon you'll be right.
All right, Tina. Thanks for that.
No, best of luck. Best of luck.
Thank you, Daryl. Now, it's always a worrisome. You're asking for a hot potato take. What is your take on the potatoes?
What is my take on
it? Like, you know, you're saying, you know, you've asked the audience, what is your take on this potato problem? And we're going to get a lot of answers on potato problems here.
Oh, I love
here.
It. No. That's okay, maybe not.
Let's play hot potato.
Hot potato.
Oh, we have a soundtrack for everything. I love it. I'm going to answer the next question in song. No.
and look, Jill, she's not only a good listener for me, she's a good gardener for you, Tino. She said, thanks, gone.
Oh, well done, Jill.
The noxious weed you pointed out, gone. Or gone. That's what we want to hear about.
She's acted. She's gone. Yep. No time like the present.
If you've got a question for Tino on Gardening Talkback, give us a call on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tassie, 1300 222 936. Anne in Penguin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Anne. How's yourself?
Yeah, terrific. Thanks.
Brilliant.
I've got two quick questions, please.
Yep.
I'd just like to ask, I see Millie, she's got this cool metal watering can on the Gardening Australia program, and I would like to purchase one.
Hers is the upside-down one?
Yeah, with the front, the spout is up.
Yeah, Jerry's got one as well. They're actually, I mean, it's the best way of watering is upside down, because what you're doing is simulating rain. So, you know, people shoot their jet of water at the ground, and then there's usually a big hole and a bunch of unhappy plants. So, no, definitely a good one. A lot of nurseries these days, I think, have them, or certainly have brochures on where to get them.
I've been looking. I've been to, like, three hardware shops and a couple of nurseries, and no one knows. They just, like, show me a plastic one.
I think there is... you can look online, obviously. I think there is a shop in town in the main strip, Elizabeth Street.
Is that Hobart?
Yeah, in Hobart. Oh, whereabouts are you?
Penguin. She's in Penguin.
Oh, Penguin. Oh, you might have to go into Launceston to go on...
To a garden shop?
Yeah, and actually there's a big nursery, I don't think I'm allowed to say, but there's a big nursery in Launceston, and they should have one there, if not online, is where you're looking at. And there's a lot of really nice old artisan things you can buy. But I think Millie, if I'm right, because I went and visited her when she got that, I think she got it from like an op shop in Footscray somewhere. So,
oh, got lucky.
and you know, the op shops and tip shops can be a really good way of looking for these older things too.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's nice to have nice tools.
Yeah,
I in some ways, you know, recycle, reuse is great and all, but I just like buying good quality in the first place, and yeah, cool. Certainly with gardening tools anyway.
Terrific.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks. Could I just quickly, we've got some camellias. They're 1.5 metres high.
Yeah.
And they're flowering. Can I move them to put them in a better spot now?
Now's not a great time. I'd be waiting for them to finish flowering. If you did do it now, I'd probably keep a close eye on them. You could get away with it, but I'd probably knock a few of the flowers off, maybe all the flowers, to be honest. And
you may as well wait for the flowers to finish anyway.
I'd wait for the flowers to finish, yeah.
That would mean like summer then, or like, you know, in 2 months?
Yeah, depending on what camellia you've got. But yeah, that'll be then. Or you could do it after in the autumn period. I do most of my planting and most of my moving of evergreen plants either just before spring, and obviously with camellias, you're depending on the camellia, you're coming into flowering at that time, or in the autumn. The autumn is like the nicest, gentlest season for doing anything, cool. I've found, both for your garden and you as well.
Thank you, Anne.
No, my pleasure.
Bye. Thank you very much for that. Now, this is a rarity, Tino, a ridiculous rarity. A question about gardening has come through to which I know the answer.
Wow.
Can you mark me for this?
Can I ask the question and then you can answer it? I'll ask it in my best job.
The second bottom text from Anna Meek.
Okay. Anna. Oh, yes. So, Joel, Anna Meek has asked, green manure has taken over my veggie patch. Do I just pull it out and compost it, or should I do something else to prepare my patch for planting seedlings?
So that's your impression of me, is it?
I don't know. I got a little bit like, you know, da-da-da, but then I kind of tamed it down and made it more. Yeah.
You got to sound more like Barry White, baby. Yeah. My answer to this, I know, because Tino's told me this at my house 2 weeks ago. Dig it in.
Yeah.
Dig it in.
That's it.
That's what green manure is for. Dig it into the ground, turn it over, and there you go.
You bash it down first. I usually use like the side of my fork or a mattock or a hoe. You can use a brush cutter or a mower even, and you sort of just, you know, you cut it all down and then you dig it all back through, and it's your soil. Wait for 2 weeks and your soil will come up beautifully. So, yeah.
What a rarity that I know anything at all about gardening.
I'll leave you to the rest of it there. Actually, can I do the mad minute on you? No, I'm joking.
That would be fun. Don't know. Whatever. All right. If you've got a question for Tino, you can call right now, 1-300-222-936. Lightning round. As many texts as we can get through in 10 minutes. Philip in Acton Park says, good morning. I'm hoping Tino can identify what's affecting these gum trees. Oh. I can't see any chewing insects. Could it be wind damage? It only appears to affect gum trees I plant, not ones that self-seed. Also, do you think they'll recover or should I replant? These just look dreadful. They're just dying off and dry and, wow, that looks shocking.
Yeah, that looks like it's been eaten by a caterpillar. There's been caterpillar attack on that. Yeah, it's hard to say. I can see one leaf that's definitely been nibbled on. You can almost see the bite marks.
But there's other leaves that don't look nibbled on and are looking really dead.
Yeah, there's that's sort of a tip burn on those. So look, it may be overly wet feet. I doubt it though with this season. I'd say there's an insect attack. Certainly there's a caterpillar attack going on, but there may even be, you know, they do suffer from a scale insect, or it's an over-fertilisation. There's a nice closer. Sorry, I had a very unclose. Yeah, that looks like frost burn or some kind of, overwatering or burning, some environmental factor. And the other ones, I'd say a caterpillar attack. Yeah. So maybe even some possums sort of nibbling in there as well. I think there's a multitude of things going on there.
You think these ones maybe just need to be let go?
I actually think they're probably, you know, they're so durable. So I reckon you'll probably get growth back from them, depending if it is possum and they just go for any new growth again. Then, yeah, you're going to have, you're going to lose it. But again, it seems to be the message of today is persistence. You know, keep going with the plant. Plants want to live. Or you just, you know, as a gardener, we're just giving them that little helping hand along. And I'd go over the plant. I'd have a look at for caterpillars, see if I can find them there. You could give them a squish, but bear in mind a lot of the caterpillars that are on gums are native caterpillars. So giving them a squish now might mean that you don't get to appreciate a lovely moth later on in the season. Just saying. And you could probably go around, check the water, the soil around that and see how wet it is.
Mary Crow, president of the Hobart Horticultural Society, has sent us some photos of their daffodils, camellias and floral art show at the Hobart Town Hall today from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Free entry, stall, raffles and light refreshments, all are welcome. They are some absolutely beautiful-looking plants.
Those single flowers are fantastic. And look at those camellias. And look, it's a great, I mean, it's free. It's a great sort of morning or afternoon. It's a great way of spending. You can get food there, and there's some wonderful people who are just passionate about what they do.
Now, speaking of, we should mention that next weekend we are at Blooming Tasmania in the Albert Hall in Launceston. So from 8:30 till 11, we'll be broadcasting live from the Albert Hall in Launceston. Yep. We'll be doing a gardening talkback as usual, but hoping for as many people to come and talk to us in person. Bring a sample of your plant. If you've got a yellowing leaf, we'll bring a yellowing leaf in so Tino can conduct a grisly post-mortem on it in full view of everybody at the hall there. So Blooming Tasmania next Saturday, and next Sunday I'm going to be at... kicking Tino out at that point. I'm going to be at the Cataract Gorge, especially looking at the pool and the history of pools in northern Tasmania. Yeah. If you have a story about the pool up there, I'd love to speak to you. If you know someone who's been involved with swimming, especially in the north of Tasmania, I would really love to know who they are. Please get in touch with me. Give me a text.
I once weed in that pool.
Thanks, Tina. We all need to know that. Yeah. Empty it, I tell you. All right, back onto the text there. Hi, Tina and Joel. My husband was very heavy-handed throwing lime around the lawn in his efforts to get rid of moss.
Yeah.
A lot was put around the drip line of the conifers. Bless him. Is there something I can do to neutralise the effects, please? I thought about adding blood and bone. His.
Look, it should rectify itself. I wouldn't go to the extreme of chucking him around. He's obviously, his heart's in the right spot. He's just chucked it a little bit. He's been a little bit careless with his application, I suppose. But yeah, the intent was there. Look, you can, extra water, depending on your soil, can leach a lot of the effects of things like lime. You know, it's picking up bits of it and it's transporting it lower through the soil profile. You could counteract it with organic material. I mean, mostly, you know, fresh organic material is acidic. So certainly compost can be, depending on where it is, it can be slightly acidic. So adding that be a good sulfur.
Could perhaps her husband be part of the solution with, as Peter Cundall used to put it, his man water acidic in the appropriate place?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if man water is that acidic. But yeah, you could try. Man water wouldn't hurt. You know, or lady water. I mean, okay, we're moving on from that. sorry, I'm blushing now.
Let's just move on to the next one. Okay, you've already said some organic material. Yeah. Marion says, hi, Tina. Wanted to try cloud pruning on a 2.5 metre camellia. What tips, please?
Cloud pruning. Oh, look, it's a fine art, so be as neat and delicate as possible, I suppose. You know, the thing with cloud pruning is one little thing I found can look a bit out of place, you know, so make every cut count, right, if that makes sense. Some people just do it with hedge trimmers and that's great, you know, the plant will grow back and you will form a cloud, but there are a whole bunch of different techniques at the gardens that were utilizing a Japanese technique of cloud pruning, which is sort of allowing the growth to go down and then back up again, and you get this lovely kind of little branchlets, curved branchlets. They did it on a Luma apiculata's
almost like a cursive W in the kind of shape from the side.
Yeah, like wow, you're good at this, the whole wordy pictures things.
Theater of the mind, we call it.
Yeah, so that just make every cut count and cut to cut as close to a node point as you can, because any sort of dead little sticks, if you leave a little stub end from, you know, of growth, you know, they look dead and they, it looks awful. So, but good on you. Like, it's a really lovely way of, of pruning.
Stephen Kingston says, I have potatoes coming up from some left in the ground from last year. Are they worth keeping or should I yank them out?
Yeah, look, potatoes in some ways are the biggest weed of the veggie patch. You know, you rotate your garden beds and by year six, if you've got six beds, you've got six beds of potatoes at this time of the year. Look, I tend to pull them out. I'll have a bandicoot around. If you can leave them. But the problem with them is they can be weaker and sometimes you can start to get sort of a wilt virus, which is or a blight forming, which can be really bad for all your Solanaceae crops for quite a while. So I tend to pull them, but I, in saying that, I have had many free crops off potatoes that have volunteered in the garden, I suppose.
Next on the text is, Steph also said, what do I do with used coffee grounds? They can just go into the compost, can't they?
Yeah, look, you can go put them straight in the compost. You can put them straight around the garden. You can put them straight on soil. The negative effects that they have in soil usually rectifies itself in a couple of weeks. And, you know, but what I'll do is I'll chuck them around on a mulched ground. I don't chuck them around on bare dirt, but a mulch ground is fine, but in your compost bin's always good, you know, and it's a byproduct. So,
Tina, speaking of barren ground, says, my chook yard is incredibly barren, especially so in summer. Are there some plants or small trees I can grow inside the chook yard that the chooks won't destroy, or will I always need to create a barrier? This is Tina in North Taz.
Look, what you can do is, I've found trees that sucker from the base, like bays, olives, etc., to be not as good, unless you want to continually cut their roots off, because, I mean, cut those suckering growth off, because chickens scratch around and then they obviously, you know, damage those roots and the roots respond by putting up suckering growth. But whatever you use, a really good trick, you can put anything in there, but whatever you use, put your plant in and then get a bit of chicken mesh and cut it, cut a square or a circle of it and sort of with a, so you cut a circle and then you cut through the middle so the stem can, you can slot it over the stem.
Yep.
And that just acts as protection around the tree base.
So they literally can't scratch so up they, the dirt there.
Yeah, and you mulch the top of that. So they'll scratch the mulch off, but they'll find the wire and they'll stop there. Once the tree's established, you can take that off. You know, it takes a good season or so. I usually find fruit trees are really good as well, as apples are great. They've got nice, you know, horizontal branches that the chickens just love sitting on. So,
Jeff, at our final question on the text today is going to be Jeff at Tea Tree saying, Joel, ask Tino, did he also pee in the pool at Elmsley Road during Learn to Swim classes? I think Jeff needs to know how thoroughly he needs to wash himself right now.
Don't they put like a dye in these days that makes it go purple? I remember a top of the world pool, or it used to be called up in Dunearn, I think. But it was, yeah, that wasn't water by the end of the day. Yeah. There was just so many kids in there. It was a great place. Great place to swim, though. Oh,
all right, okay. Let's go back onto the phone, shall we? Donna in Hobart, hello.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Donna. How are you going?
Oh, look, I'm really, really going well. And my question is about my vegetable garden. Tino, I have a very small area for my vegetable garden, and I've got it in two beds.
Yeah.
And during the winter time, I just, at the end of the season for tomatoes, et cetera, so March, May,
yeah,
I just put lots and lots of chicken manure in there, lots of compost, homemade compost, lots of blood and bone, and I leave it all winter.
Lovely.
And so my question is, with my tomatoes, do I still, and I think the answer is yes, do I still need to practice crop rotation?
It is a good idea. And with tomatoes, as I stated with one of the questions about the potatoes, is they're all Solanaceae. You've got eggplant, capsicum, chili, tomato and potato. So they're all part of that same family and they can all suffer, like people in family, you know, the same genes. Yes, they can all suffer from very similar problems. So you've got to kind of rotate all of those crops out of that, you know, from bed to bed. You can get away with it. I mean, crop rotation's more of a guide. You know, some years being in small gardens, I've had to use the same dirt to plant a crop again. And you know, some years you get away with it, some years you don't. And you know, that's some years, you know, you may have crop rotated and still get those problems. So, you know, nothing in life, certainly in horticulture, is certain. So some years are just worse for some pests than others. So, look, if it's a choice of not planting at all or putting them in, I'd put them in. Tomatoes, for me, I wait all year for them. If I had a totem fruit, it would be a tomato. I don't know if you can have totem fruit, but, you know, if there was one, it would be a tomato for me. But, look, I've used pots before to grow my tomatoes in. 30-centimetre pots are a good size, 40 are better. But just gives you a bit more wiggle room with watering, etc. But 30-centimetre pots, and you know, depending on how many tomatoes you want, usually you can get quite a few of them from places like tip shops, etc., or even any container will do. And then get some cheap potting mix and mix a bit of that compost through it, and you'll have a standard enough mix to grow your tomatoes in. And it can be a good way of doing it in a small garden.
Okay, I think I might go the pots this year then, and I'll start them off as little tiny fellows.
Yeah.
And just keep potting them up until I get to that 30 or 40 centimetres, and I'll put them, in the sun.
I'll raise them from seed until they get up to, until they start to develop their first true leaves, even their second set of true leaves, and then I'll pot them into something like a 4-inch pot or a tube individually and grow them on in that for, you know, a couple more weeks. And then I'll put them into the 30-centimetre pot. So there's really only the sowing of the seed, the potting up to the 4-inch, and then up to the 30-centimetre. So it's three things.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now that I've had that explained to me, I've finished my breakfast and I'm ready to get into the garden.
Oh, good on you. I'm so jealous.
Fantastic.
Good on you. Well done.
Get shoveling there, Donna. Thank you so much for that. You're listening to Gardening Talk back with Joel and Tino on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. Back in a moment with your more of those questions. I reckon we could probably handle one or two more callers. 1-300-222-936 is the number. Now, as you may have heard, Tino is not allowed to look at the extra screen, or he gets distracted by it halfway through his answers. But he's been looking at the screen just then nonetheless. Go on, turn it back on.
Is that turn about? All right.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to concentrate
job.
until you've told. Now, good morning, Joel and Tino, says Lynn. Another lemon tree question. Most lemons on the tree have developed fine brown spots. Over time, the areas begin to rot.
Yeah.
All suggestions gratefully received, because you looked at that and went, ooh.
Yeah, look, we had that answer the other week with... Yeah, that close-up doesn't look bad. It's good, does it? We had the question the other week. There was sort of freckling over a lemon, and I'd sort of said it could be something called anthracnose, or it more likely was frost damage. And that one was, this looks more like anthracnose. If you've got a fungal problem, if it's rotting like that, then pulling it off, I think copper, a form of copper called copper oxychloride, does work to I suppose, control the spread of it. And then just keeping a tree well fed, but I'd be knocking those fruit off as I see them. So
knocking them off and the copper treatment.
Yeah. Sorry, Lynn. Lynn, cool. I'm turning the screen off.
Okay. Liz, hello there.
Hello.
Morning, Liz. How are we doing?
Good. Thanks, Joel. I'm wondering, is it too late to plant broad beans now, please?
Not necessarily. It's actually, you know, you've got a few opportunities. Well, you've got quite a few opportunities to plant broad beans. You can grow them, you know, you can start in late autumn and let them sit there and will grow over the winter period, and then they start to flower now, the bees come out and pollinate them. Or you can plant them now and they'll grow up, and they actually last quite a long way through the season, whereas ones you plant in the autumn tend to, you know, start to suffer from rust and you know, start to I suppose, bear less as the season progresses into like January or December-January period, whereas the ones planted now tend to last that little bit longer. I've seen them go through all the way through to summer, even into autumn, so, and still be bearing really well. And in some ways, those beans that I've had off those later flowering ones or later planted ones, yeah, the beans seem nice and sweet. So whether or not that's anything, they seem to taste a bit better. Although broad beans to me taste good anyway. I eat them raw. No, you should be right, mate. Not a problem.
Good, thanks, Dana.
No.
Was there any particular brand for planting in late like that?
Oh, look, mate, not really. You can go with the early dwarfs and stuff. They're kind of, they'll give you a good bit of growth. They're only small. I go for broad beans for flavour, and I love the Aqua Dolce. I think it translates to sweet water. And they are, for my mind, the flavour of them is the best. Yeah, I just find them really lovely.
Yeah. Right. But, okay.
Actually, the crimson flowering one's are quite a good one too. Just if you can get your hands on it.
Thanks very much, Dana.
No, my pleasure, mate.
Good on you, Les. Thank you very much for that. Just a quick little reminder. After 10 o'clock, we've got insect talk back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if you've spotted an interesting insect or you've got a question about insects that you've seen or in your garden or in the wild or whatever, then you can give us a call. And with us is going to be Dr. Stephen Quarrell, entomologist, to talk about bugs.
It's so cool, bugs.
Mary is in Allen's Rivulet. Hello, Mary.
Hello there.
Morning, Mary.
Hello, Tino.
How are we going today?
We're going okay. Yes, we're looking forward to getting out in the garden.
Okay.
While I've been on hold, I've learnt two or three interesting little snippets. So
she knows which pools to not swim at anymore, Tino. That's the important thing.
It wasn't me. Was it? I should say it wasn't just me. I'm sure it wasn't just me.
you two have such great fun with this program. You really do.
You know.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Your nickname as a swimmer, the Whizzer, wasn't because you were fast, Tino.
No, it wasn't. No, definitely not.
Anyway, Mary, what can we do for your hellebores?
Oh, you got hellebores.
I've got hellebores in pots.
Yep.
And they were in the sun at one stage, and I moved them round the side of the house where they get some morning sun. But they're really manky. They're all the spots on their leaves and they don't look good.
Yeah.
Can I feed them with something?
Look, you can do it. Sort of getting, you know, they'll start to, depending on what type of hellebore, what cultivar of hellebore, they'll start to sort of go into their decline soon anyway. But, yeah, you could give them a feed of a complete fertiliser and they certainly wouldn't mind it. But I've had that happen on hellebores in the past and all I really do is wait for them. You kind of do that thing, well, this season wasn't a great season and you notch it down to, you know, just wasn't right, and then you know make sure you just cut that foliage off to deadhead the flowers. I mean the plant at the end of this season. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. They are quite durable and they do come back. It might have just been that it's been closed up a little bit. Some of that early growth on the hellebores that I had anyway. Although I missed them. I've just left my garden with all my hellebores, but some of that growth early on was quite dense, which can sometimes lead to you know, closing up of circulation, air circulation in the plant, which can lead to fungal problems.
I would have loved some dense, you know, growth.
Oh, you didn't get any at all?
No, not really.
Sorry.
No, there were a few, you know, spindly little leaves. And I bought two new hellebores and put them in pots at the back of the house when the afternoon sun comes. And one of them has grown absolutely beautifully. It's got flowers on it, still got loads of flowers. The other one, unfortunately, we have visitors here, and the kangas seem to like them.
Oh, right, yes.
And they ate them right down to the base.
Well, look, yeah, give them a feed, try and get them back, and if you can protect them, I suppose. But, you know, as I said, they'll probably be going into a bit of decline anyway as a plant, as the season progresses. So, yeah, but give them a feed, being that they do have that dormant underground stem that they, you know, they'll be pulling nutrient into that now and storing it for next season's flush of of growth. So, well, not next season's, next winter's flush of growth. So, yeah.
So just feed them with?
Oh, give them a feed in a pot with a, you could use a complete fertiliser. That would be a really good one. You could use a mix of sea salt and fish emulsion. Sea salt's just a tonic. The fish emulsion is the actual, the feed. You know, that's the meat and three veg kind of, whereas the seaweed's kind of like the cod liver oil. Yeah, if that analogy works. And you can, yeah, so mixing those two together will certainly help the plant straight away.
I did put some rocks around them that came, I don't know what sort of rocks they were, but sort of, I don't know. I think they came out of a barbecue.
Oh, right, a heat beat. Yeah, yeah, like a scoria rock maybe or something.
The charcoal heat bead are we talking about there?
Well, I don't know what they were, but anyway, they were around, and my husband said, oh, there you are, put those around that plant. But that wouldn't have affected them, would it?
The only thing I could think of is that the alkalinity, if it did have a lot of...
Yeah, charcoal ash is very alkaline, yeah, so if that's what it was, heat beads...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really too sure what they're made out of, but if it,
they're basically say, charcoal, so they're intensely alkaline.
Say, yeah, the alkalinity may have been a problem for
well,
us.
Well, I'll take them out.
Yeah,
as well.
The good
I'll
thing is if,
out,
if
toss,
they're big,
toss them out and give them a complete feed.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe remulch the ground. They do love a bit of mulch. I usually use a straw in a garden bed, but
straw.
Yeah, yeah, just
oh,
like
I've got
a,
loads of straw.
Oh, brilliant! Excellent.
Well, there you go.
And usually in that situation, I put down like a thin layer of straw, like, say, 5 centimetres of straw, and then you put down a little bit of, say, compost or manure over the top of that, and all you're doing with that is just it holds the straw in check.
we have special manure here.
Ooh.
It's called multi-poo.
Multi-poo.
It's miniature mule and miniature donkey.
Oh, so cute. Is the poo's cute too? Sorry, that... just came out.
A question I never thought would be asked on any radio program ever. Are the poos
yes,
cute?
Yes, it would. It'd be on any radio program and any television program I'm watching as well.
Oh, that's great. I learned something just then too. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Mary. Best of luck.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Okay. Grace is in Ulverston with her proteas. Hello, Grace.
Hello.
Morning, Grace. How you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. I've got an old protea,
yeah.
And it's got spots all over it. Mm. And it's got more and more.
Yes. Is the ground where they're in, is it quite wet?
Yes, it does get quite wet here.
Yeah, look, just over, I've noticed over this time of the year with a lot of those proteas, leucodendrons do the same, that means same sort of family, is when it's quite wet around their feet. And during the cold, they'll tend to get quite a leaf spot on them. Now, I've never seen this as a problem in itself. Overly wet feet for too long, which can cause that leaf spot, I think, can cause the plant to turn its toes up because, you know, they just don't like sitting in too much water. So the problem is, though, with proteas is they've got very delicate roots. You know, you start digging around, you know, the actual plant, and sometimes they can reward you with just, you know, dying. You know, they just don't like to be interfered with at all in the ground. And usually the way of, I suppose, alleviating soil dampness around a root zone is to try and core and with using your garden fork and, you know, create sort of long drainage holes for the water to go down deeper into the soil. But if you're going to do that, I'd really watch out around your proteas. Just try and do it as far back as you think will still be effective, but won't damage that root system. So, yeah. So I as the weather warms up, I've found, and you deadhead, you know, your proteas off, I've found that they kind of rectify themselves, but it can also be a sign of old age. So the plants,
it is old because it was here when we moved here and we've been here over 40 years.
Yeah. Oh, in that case, yeah, I'd say, look, I'd persist again. Persistence is the theme of the day, but I'd say it might be getting to that age where it's just, you might need replacing.
Oh, dear.
Thank you very much, Grace. Best of luck with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Grace.
Sorry. Tino's had to give you the kiss of death there. Margaret and Daniel, hang on. Tino will get you in a moment. Thank you, Tino.
Oh, my complete pleasure. Thanks for everyone for listening and ringing in and just being lovely, I suppose. Thanks.
See you next week.
Bye.